Okay, we're here with Mr. Roy Elmore of Kingsville, Texas. He's the owner of Roy's Camera Nook in downtown Kingsville. And we're here for an interview. Subject matter will be to his concern. And I'll start off by asking him, how long have you been in Kingsville, Mr. Elmore?
Well, I came to Kingsville in 1942 to go to A&I. And then in 43, I had to go in service, and I came back here in 46 to start back in A&I. And I've been here ever since.
Okay. Did you come to Texas before that, or?
No, I was born in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
Mm-hmm. So I'm native Texan.
Native Texan all the way. Could you tell us more or less your first experiences in Kingsville when you first moved into the town? What was there? I mean, what was there to start on? What was there to work with in terms of, bettering oneself?
Well, I can remember when I first came here to go to college, there wasn't very many students at A&I. There was about, I believe the enrollment was about 500, and there wasn't too many bars going because so many had went to service, and so we were really the bars were in the minority out here, and there was only the administration building there, and Nearman Hall, which was there, and the two dorms, Lofton. And let's see, one was boys, one was the girls. Lofton Hall was where they were fed, cousins, and what was that?
It was Seal.
Seal? I think so, Seal Hall. But the campus didn't amount to much. There was the gymnasium, which was there, and music building that was there, and of course the president's home, and the agriculture, whoever was in charge of the agriculture part of the college had their home over there. We called it the cactus patch, and the home, it was just on the other side of the home economics building there. But I don't even recall. I think the base was out here, or had. I'm not sure, though, because I know when I came up here, it was a short time after that my folks came up here, and Mother studied out here to be a metalsmith, and took a course in being a riveter, and that was at the time while they were training the women. And they call them Rosie the Riveters, you know. And so she was out here and was taking the course out here to go to the over to main base in Corpus to work. And so consequently, she was going to school at night. But I worked at the, when I started this school, at A&I, why I had a job working at T-Jack under Prof. Lanier, and I jerked sodas over there, and Prof. made his own ice cream. I helped him do that, and then at Thanksgiving time, why we'd kill turkeys and serve them, and I usually had a job going out and chopping the turkeys' heads off because the cook that we had wouldn't do it. What else would you?
Did you get a degree from Kingsville?
Yes.
University of Texas?
Yes.
I mean, A&I?
I came back after I was in service, and I was working toward an engineering degree, and ended up with a physics degree in 49.
Have you used this degree in any way? Did you go into business for yourself out afterwards, or did you, work for any company or anything like that?
Well,
Was there anything in Kingsville to say to attract your degree? Could you use your degree in Kingsville itself? I mean, the oil and everything?
Well, I didn't have any plans there for degree in that respect. While I was taking physics, I had some electives that I could take. So I decided to take industrial arts. And I had seen some of the boys working with photography out there, so I decided, well, I'd like to try it. And so I took the photography course, which was, I believe it was 107, was the first course, or the introductory course in photography at that time. And I enjoyed it so much, I started off with a box camera, and then as I went along, I couldn't turn out the type of work I wanted to, so I bought an old, well, it was a second-hand Kodak Reflex, which shortly after I bought it, well, Kodak quit making a twin lens reflex. And then I went to a 4x5, and then the following semester I took the advanced course in 307, and I became so interested in it that I decided that I'd like to try to start a studio here and stay here. And so that year, I got my degree in physics, and instead of pursuing that any farther, I decided I'd try and see if I could make a go at with a photographic studio, and started freelancing, and then eventually rented a building and went into photography full time. You know,
was this your original studio here on?
No, I worked in my home to start off with, and then Dr. Chandler decided to build the Chandler building that's down on the corner of King and 8th Street, and it's where Kingsville Insurance Company is now. And he gave me a chance to rent a place there, and so I rented that rented a place from him, and I started in shooting nothing but portraits there, and going out and taking wedding pictures. And after we were there about 4 years, while the other studio, which was Nichols Studio here in town, they decided they didn't want to stay in business here. So they came over and offered to sell out to me. And so my wife and I bought them out. And my wife ran Nichols Studio, which we called Roy's Camera Nook, because it was a real small place. It was only about 12.5 feet wide. And that's where the Nook came from. And my original place that in Chandler Building was called Elmore Studio. So consequently, we operated two places for a while there, and it proved too much trying to keep help and trying to oversee both places, and we decided to combine the two. And I looked around town and found an old bowling alley that was 50 feet wide, and I didn't need but 25 feet, so made arrangements with the owners that we would split the building in half, and I'd take the west side of it, which we did, and we combined the two together in that one building, and kept the name Roy's Camera Nook. And when we went in there, well, we started selling photographic supplies, and also had studio. And we stayed there until about, I think it was 1959, when I bought this piece of property that we're now on here at 217 East Clayburg, and had to tear down the old building and build one back. And this is one of the few buildings that I've ever seen that was designed especially for a studio and a camera shop up in front. And that's the way we came to be here.
I see you brought in somebody else into the picture. You mentioned your wife. how does she figure in the success of yourself? Like, what? How did she play? I mean, did she play more of a mental role? Or,
I mean, she was from the very beginning when she was quite interested in photography herself, and of course she was pushing and wanting, thought that it would be a good thing to go ahead and put a studio in, and she became very good at tinting and coloring of the prints, and then she, after a while, after we really got into the portrait in, why, we needed someone to retouch the negatives, and so she started retouching negatives and became very good at that. So without a negative retoucher and without a tenor, why, we couldn't have went very far. And plus she helped retouch prints and see that they got out on time. So she was an essential part of it.
Let's go into a little bit about Kingsville itself now. Maybe you could give us an overview of how Kingsville was, how it is, and maybe in your opinion, what is in store for Kingsville, what the future is in terms of progress, successful business ventures, and whatever. It does have a lot of opportunities. It's got the college, which is growing all the time. It's got the Naval Air Station, which is training a big majority of pilots in the United States. In your opinion, how was Kingsville? How is it? And what is the future of Kingsville?
Well, when I opened my first studio, why, the base had shut down. There was no base here. The college was using the base as an addition to their facilities, where I think they had moved a lot of their agriculture classes and everything out there. And so consequently, when I went in business, well, I didn't have much, I could not look forward to having any business out of the base, other than I expected the college kids, you know, out here to really be of a lot of help, because I knew they had portraits made quite often. I might say this, that when I went in business, it was over on 8th Street, off Main Street, and Kingsville was very hard at that time to put in a business in that was not on Main Street. It was a Main Street town. People didn't want to walk a half a block off of Main Street to shop. And I had quite a bit of problem there from the standpoint that people would call me and make an appointment to come and have their portraits made, and they'd never show up. And what they were doing, they did not know but anything farther than what was on Main Street. So they'd call me thinking they were talking to the studio that was on Main Street, and they'd end up and they'd go over there instead of coming to me. So people just did not want to walk. It's become a different proposition now, and seems like they're with the development of 14th Street, and now it's become about as much many businesses on 14th as there is downtown. But as far as business goes and the development of Kingsville, I can see nothing but where it's going to progress farther and keep on building up. I guess back in 42, I imagine Kingsville had around 12 or 13,000 people. It wasn't very large. I mean, as far as residential area goes, and I wasn't particularly, I didn't get out as much because I was at college then, and I didn't get to, or wasn't as interested in looking and seeing what businesses were here and everything then. But what I can remember was there was, I mean, Main Street business, and that was about it. Anything on, there was a few fit service stations on 6th Street, but that there just wasn't any businesses off of Main Street. Other than the T-Jack out around the college, and there had been a cleaning establishment, and they'd gone out of business when I came up here. And no grocery store. You had to come all the way into town to get groceries. But now it's developed. There's all types of businesses. I have no idea how many business houses there are in Kingsville now. And the population count on this last census, I think, was about 29,000, so they said. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's wrong, because I think there, I was sure there was more people than that. But here in the Chamber of Commerce and everybody else, I think, felt the same way. But with all the oil and gas around town, and the ranch is, the King Ranch is really developed and building new bank buildings and all new buildings and that's going up in Kingsville, I can see nothing but a very prosperous state of affairs for Kingsville. And I feel like that it'll keep going, you know. I see no dying of Kingsville like a lot of your towns have, you know, that have lost their businesses.
There was a myth, well, I don't know if it was a myth, it was maybe quite true at one time, but the idea of the businessmen in Kingsville was that the reason that the businesses were so slow, and perhaps maybe still are, is for the fact that to buy something, a lot of the people don't even look in Kingsville and look toward Corpus, in other words, the big city. They go over there, they think they can get it cheaper, or it's more convenient for them to drive 40 miles to Corpus and rather than get it in Kingsville. Do you think people still think this way?
I think that they do. I found it very hard here. So often people give no thought about shopping in Kingsville first, that they will drive to Corpus. I've had them come into my shop so many times and say, oh, I didn't know that I could find this item here in Kingsville. I went over to Corpus. I had one man just the other day was, he said, well, I ordered this same book that you got here, and said I had to order it, pay $1.75 for it, and said, here, you got it for $1.50 in Kingsville here. And I find I don't know how to fight it. I don't know how to combat people, you know, to get them to realize that it's possible to get just about anything that they want here in Kingsville, and to shop here first rather than drive to Corpus. And I also, another item that makes me so unhappy is so often that they think of driving to Corpus first when they want to buy something, but when it comes to wanting donations for worthy causes, which I'm sure that they all are, they will always think first of the Kingsville merchants. And running a camera shop where, like I am here, why, I have so many problems of people. They'll, if they want to buy an item, they run to Corpus or else run somewhere else to buy it. But if something goes wrong with this new item that they bought and they don't know how to fix it, why, the first person to think of is come see Roy and see if he'll fix it. And I don't know how to, I don't know what the answer is to stop this, because eventually, I'll say this, and I have heard different other camera store owners say this many years ago, and I listened to them and thought about it, and I can see more of the writing on the wall all the time, that it's not going to be too long, and there's not going to be a camera store as such. All of your cameras, if you're going to want to buy camera supplies, you're going to have to go to a drugstore, or maybe a grocery store, or a combination store that has everything. And all they're going to have is just the camera sitting there. And if you want to buy it, all right. If you don't want to buy it, all right. If you buy it and you have trouble with it, well, that's just tough. We can't do anything for you. And I'm not happy about it. I'd like to see. I think that there is a need for camera stores. But I don't know what to do. I don't know how to encourage the people to think about this from this standpoint. If they ever have help, need help, they're not going to be able to find it one of these days.
Do you think that, say, better or proper advertisement procedures might help in this ignorance of the people not knowing that there is the stuff here in Kingsville? Or do you think they already know it's here, but just for the idea of going to Corpus, they go to Corpus and buy it? Do you think that advertisement would help?
I don't know whether advertising would help, because it's the people have this in mind. The way it appears to me, that Corpus is a larger city, that they can find what they want over there. They have more choices or something.
And it'll be better.
And it's better. And what's an hour's drive over and an hour's drive back? In fact, some of them might be looking forward to having any excuse to get out of town to go, you know, to for the drive. And I don't know. I don't know whether the advertising is lacking or not. I know that a lot of them do advertise, and you know, a lot of places are real heavy on it. I've more or less found that my best advertising is my marquee that I have in the front. And but I get a lot of comment on it, and I know people are reading it. And I say what I believe a lot of times on my marquee, and I get a lot of reaction. In fact, I've had phone calls from people that let me know that they read it in no uncertain terms and that they might not like what's up there. But I don't know how else I can tell the people about this driving to Corpus and then spend their money over there. And this is not helping Kingsville at all when they do this. I mean, so what if they did save 50 cents or a dollar on an item? The money they spent over there is going into Corpus to help build Corpus up and not help Kingsville. And the money they spend here, it's got to circulate and help Kingsville grow. And the taxes are coming from the money that's going into the city, and the schools are coming from a big majority from the businessmen that's located not only downtown but out on 14th Street or anywhere else. And so it's needed that they spend their money here. The more they spend the money here, the more that the merchants can spend to, and the taxes, of course, the city taxes not only get coming out of this 1% city tax that they're getting, why, in any respect, it's going to help the economy out in Kingsville and help Kingsville grow.
You mentioned your marquee. That's the sign in front of Roy's mm-hmm. Camera Nook. Mm-hmm. I take it that you don't only advertise on that. At times you put maybe comments,
right.
Social comment, political comments at times.
I usually try to run one side with some advertising, something that I want to get across to the people as far as what I have for sale. And on the other side, well, I'll use to make my comments, if I do have any, and try to say something that might attract people's attention and might do the community some good.
Like, what might you put on the comment side of it? Like, what have you put?
Of course, you're catching me off guard here now on that, but some of the things that come to mind that I've gotten a reaction from is that one Mother's Day I ran up there on the marquee by the old bag, a gadget bag for Mother's Day, and of course, I got one call from a lady, and she says, "Are you as obnoxious as your signs are?" And so that brought on that the next week when I changed my sign, I put up there, "If you don't like my signs, don't read them." And then I have put up there that if you think, in this sense, I would have to get some of my deals up there to read them off, because I tried to make them rhyme, and I've only got I've got a room for three lines of 14 letters per line, and so it doesn't give you much room to say everything you like to say, I usually run up there about if you drive to Corpus, is your life worth a trip to Corpus to save a dollar? Or why spend your money in Corpus? Do they drive over here to help Kingsville out? And who's paying taxes in Kingsville, the Corpus merchants or the Kingsville merchants? I try to bring out things like this, not only in that respect, but of course I run up there about rodeos or any of the plays that the college has. You've probably seen those.
Yeah.
Run up there. And I can't think right now of other things. One time I used to have some apartments for rent, and I ran up there about a nice garage apartment with a nice view of the alley, and that created a lot of comment. I mean, different ones that had first come into town, they'd come in and talk to me and say that they thought, well, that was really something. They wouldn't put a sign up like that on the alley. What other
part? Mr. Elmore, I've heard you're doing a pictorial history. Is it on Kingsville or just the surrounding area or Texas, southern Texas?
Well, let me tell you how this all began. And several years ago, in talking to different ones, something came up about such and such a person dying. I don't even remember who it was, and that the kids came back from out of town, and that there was pictures in their possession of the old people's possession of Kingsville, and that the kids cared nothing about it, and so they tossed them out in the garbage can. And so I got to thinking about it, that how much of Kingsville's history is being lost day by day when the parents passed away and the kids had moved away and they could care less about Kingsville's history. And they'll come in and destroy them, throw them in the garbage can. They're burnt. or else they haul them off and take them to another town, and of course they're away from Kingsville and there's no way of acquiring them. So I started thinking about it, and I was wondering who I could ask or who I could get interested in acquiring these pictures or trying to keep this history in town, and I couldn't come up with anybody. And since I was interested in photography and had the equipment, I decided, well, I'd try to undertake it and do what I could. So I put out the word that anyone that had any old pictures, and I don't know of any way of separating it and saying, well, just this is Kingsville's history. So consequently, I've copied them all, and I have all the pictures that have come in that I thought was worthwhile, and they're all in albums. And right now, all I can do with them is, anyone who wants to look at them, they're welcome to come in and look at them. But I've found different people say, well, when are you going to publish a book? Well, there's...
That was my next question. You know,
well, thing is, who's going to be interested in the book? And how much is it going to cost to publish a book? And will you have enough people that will buy a book to pay for publishing the book? I don't know. I'd be willing to publish it if we thought we could sell it and get enough money out, you know, to pay for publishing. Because it's a shame it's not published, but I don't know whether an institution like, you know, that does have publishing facilities would be something to go to get it published or not. You know, what I was thinking of, like Pan American School or someone, I think they've got a printing press and everything.
How many pictures do you have? Do you know, have any idea?
I have no idea.
You said six albums full.
Yes, and they're a big album. I mean, one of them is a double album. And I know that from one person, I brought 60 down here to copy. It would be a guess on my part without going and counting them all, but I would say that there would be 1,000 or 1,500 pictures, maybe, so far. And I feel like I've just scratched the surface. I don't feel like I've gotten near all of them.
You're still getting pictures in every day?
Well, in fact, Sarah D. White, Mr. Flato, Charlie Flato III, he brought in, I think it was 13 more for me to copy, and that's just barely scratching the surface on his pictures. Because I've seen others that he's got that he never left here for me to copy. So,
It's a shame that we're on tape and we can't see any of these pictures that you have here in your hand, but maybe so that the people listening to the interview can more or less get an idea of what kind of pictures you have. You mind explaining or, you know, describing some of the pictures you have in your hand? Like that church
there,
for instance.
This is the first picture of the Methodist Church, the old Methodist Church that was built here in Kingsville. And, of course, this has now been moved. The old Methodist Church was moved over and is now in the colored section of Kingsville, and it's their Methodist church. They went, they bricked over the outside of it, but it is now standing over there. And here's another picture of a parade that they had in 1908, July the 4th, commemorating the 4th, or celebrating the 4th anniversary of Kingsville, because, you know, Kingsville was starting in Kingsville, they claim, was July the 4th, 1904. And here is a picture taken of 5th Street, which was Main Street then. And they figured 5th Street was going to be Main Street. Of a boy that was sitting on a burl. And I've been told that that's Bartlett boy, I'm not sure, but they said burros run loose all over town here. And there is a sign here on, I don't know whether you can read this one here or not, but you know, now they've got these trash containers over town with the names of merchants advertised on it. Well, now way back here in about 1912, here's trash containers distributed over town, and there's one sign on one of them that I was able to make out, and it says, Brown treats you white.
Brown treats you white.
Right, and apparently Brown was the name of a store, and he treated you right. In other words, that was the saying back there. I don't know whether you can notice one of these buildings here on, it's awful hard to make it out on this picture, but one of these buildings on Fifth Street, it's now been torn down, and it's where Kingsville Record Office is now. But it was built with the front end just like the Alamo. In other words, it had deals and up on top, why it had your front of your Alamo. And here's something else that I found quite interesting. There was the Casa Ricardo Hotel here in town, and I found two places, gotten a hold of two pictures, that where it was called Casa Gertrudis instead of Casa Ricardo. So apparently that was what it was to be called at the beginning, but it ended up Casa Ricardo.
Is this around still, or has this been?
No, it's over here where the, well, now it's the Casa Ricardo Apartments, where the older people have their apartments.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yes,
right,
yes,
up,
yes, yes,
on the other side of the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Casa Ricardo was torn down and replaced by those Casa Ricardo Apartments. But the old hotel was really a show place. And all the commercial club and of course, Lions Club used to meet there, and I mean, it was just the place to go to eat and everything. All the reports that I've had. This was the burning where the Williams building burnt. Right here, it's being rebuilt. But this is the picture where it burnt, where the one before it burnt down. And they moved all their stuff out where the general office was built, which is now the Humble Building. And this is where the Humble Building over here is now. And the stuff they got out of there, they moved over there and sold out of that open spot what he had left after the fire. That's pictures of the fire. But I found it real interesting as far as studying this history. I wish this is all I had to do is delve into the history of Clayburgh County and Kingsville. And I really do enjoy it.
Mr. Elmore, you went to, from Big Springs in 1929, you went to Brownsville in about 1933.
No, I didn't go to Brownsville. I moved to Harlingen.
I'm sorry, you went to Harlingen about
19... We moved down to Harlingen about 1934, I guess it was, because I was about 10 years old then. And
this was during the Depression.
That was during the Depression. And my grandmother had lived there all her life. My grandmother first went there in 1908. And my grandfather went to Harlingen, or went to the valley on his first trip there. He went by stagecoach. They didn't have a railroad. So that was 1903 or something before the railroad was down there. But they moved down to the Valley in, to Harlingen in 1908. And my grandfather had the first barber shop in Harlingen. And my daddy had worked with him there, and or was there with him, and daddy later went up and studied barbering at San Antone, but he came back down there and they put in a gents furnishing store. And this was in with the barbershop. And they had that for a while there, but they had a man working for him they called Maestro, and he later bought my father out, and he was there for the rest of his life. Maestro was, and he ran a, I think it was Garth, his last name was Garza. Garza. He moved the tailor shop on to the west side of the tracks there at Harlingen. And he stayed in business there, and his kids or his sons are still running that tailor shop, or the tailor shop there. But my grandfather had the first barber shop in Harlingen, and then my father had the first barber shop in Raymondville. That was ever in Raymondville. But when we got off our subject there, when we moved to Harlingen about 1934 with my grandmother there, moved in with her, my folks tried to find a job. And they walked the streets in Harlingen for days at a time, and they could not find nothing. They tried to go to work for the pea shelling plant or whatever it was there that canned peas, and they didn't need any help, and they were paying 15 cents an hour for work there, and Mother and Daddy couldn't get on, neither one of them. So finally, Mother finally found a job in working for the high school at Harlingen in the cafeteria. She'd have to go to work at about 4:30 in the morning. And they'd start cooking down there for the noon meal. And she'd work until about 3 o'clock or 3:30, cleaning up afterwards and everything in the cafeteria. And she got her noon meal furnished her, and she received $3.50 a week for this. And there was four of us that lived on $3.50 a week. In fact, my daddy finally had to put the car in the garage and just park it and block it up because we didn't have money enough to buy gasoline to run the car on. And I can remember what I got for my 11th birthday that year. I had a bicycle, and it had a flat tire on it. Couldn't be fixed. In fact, it had rotted out. And for my birthday, I got a new bicycle tire. And that was it. Usually, my folks always gave me a few more items than one, but that was all they had, and there weren't no more. But we moved out. My folks found a service station, Palm Drive Courts, what it was called, out between the ferry and Harlingen.
Those courts are still there.
Yeah. And they rented those and started running, had a little grocery store. We lived in the back end of the service station and grocery store combined, had one room back there to live in. And we lived back there for, I think it was about 6 or 8 months, something like that. It wasn't a long time, but it was during the winter, and boy, it was cold. We didn't have much heat or nothing there, but finally my father decided they were trying to open this land up out around Sebastian, east of Sebastian. Mr. Johnson was selling out a bunch of that land up there. And it was all in brush. And they were bringing in these, all this land had to be cleared by hand. And, of course, there was all these laborers there. And the guy that we were handling city service gasoline at this court, and the manager of the city service outfit, he wanted to put a city service gasoline station out east of Sebastian. And he got with my father and started talking, and they decided they'd put this a service station in out there and a little grocery store. So the place we were at, this Palm Drive Courts, sold out, and when they did sell out, we had to leave. And so my folks moved then east of Sebastian, and we had to go out there. Daddy acquired an acre of land, and it was in brush. He paid $50 for that acre of land. There was no water on it. There wasn't anything on it, just brush and rattlesnakes. Brush so thick you couldn't get through it. Had mesquite and cat claw and I don't know what else, cactus up higher in your head on it. And so he got a man to go out and help him, and he and this man go out there and they work and cleared the brush.
Two men by themselves cleared the brush?
Yeah, my dad and this other man. We'd go out. I stayed in Harlingen going to school. My mother would take me out during the on a Saturday and Sunday, we'd go out there with them and work. After they got the brush cleared, what Daddy bought, I found a man that was a farmer out there that had that knew something about carpeting. Happened to be this man happened to be an uncle to my present wife. And this is the way I met her, by the way. But anyway. He said that he'd help Daddy build this store and living quarters, which was nothing more than one building had redwood siding on it, and put a false front on the building for the grocery store part, and had one big room in the front end and one room in the back end, and this was our living quarters. Well, this carpenter and my dad built this building. And when Daddy had the lumber brought out, he pitched a tent out there, and he stayed out on this acre of land and watched the lumber, and he'd work during the day. And, of course, on the weekends, when my mother and I'd go out there and stay with him in the tent. And I thought this was hot stuff, getting to stay in a tent. And we didn't have a well down, I don't believe, at the time. We had to haul all our water out there. And I forget now how long it took them to build the building, but we finally got to move into this one room and had the grocery store up in front. And we bought sugar by the 100-pound bag and had it in a large cans used to stand up about 3 or 4 feet, and we'd pour the 100 pounds of sugar in there, and if when the people come in they want 5 pounds of sugar or 10 pounds, well, you scooped it up out of that, weighed it out in a sack for them and sold it to them. And also had pinto beans the same way. And fideo, which vermicella in English, but fideo I think in Spanish.
Yeah, fideo.
And had two gas pumps, one regular and one supposed to be in high octane. They were hand pumps. You had to pump all your gas by hand. And finally we got a well drilled, and we only had to go down about 20 feet, had good water. put a pitcher pump on it, you know, that you had to pump by hand. We had trees on there that Daddy'd cut down off, that was on there, that mesquite trees that were, I'd say, measured a good 2 foot to 30 inches across, and he'd sawed 4 blocks out of these trees. In other words, sawed 4 sections out of them to make the shelf or the table or whatever you want to call it that went around the pitcher pump. He set the 4 around there where you could bring your bucket and set it right on underneath the pitcher pump lip and pump up the bucket full of water. And of course, you don't see very many trees that,
no,
mesquite trees that large anymore. But we had, of course, all our had our outhouse out there. Later on, we got to where we were really uptown. Of course, to take a bath, we had a coal oil stove, 3-burner, which, and had an oven that sat on top of it. Once or twice, it caught the curtains on fire, it flared up. Had a gasoline stove that you'd pump up, you know, for a heating stove. I got up 1 or 2 different times in the mornings. I thought I'd be real nice and start the fire, and that thing caught fire, and I had to toss it out the door more than once because it'd start blazing up, and you know, your gas would overflow a little bit when you turn it on, and flow down in the bottom of the stove, and when finally the top got lit, well, a lot of times that would go down in the bottom and catch that gas on fire down there. And I of course, Daddy'd come out of the bed right quick when he'd see that happen, but I'd usually grab it and toss it out the door. I wasn't but about 12 or 13, I guess, then. But we had in this one room, we had a double bed and a 3-quarter bed, or yeah, I imagine it was about 3-quarter or a half that I slept on, and had our kitchen table and this coal oil stove, and we never locked up the front end of the building or, and had no help to run it. Daddy and Mother would come back and eat, try to eat at the same time. If someone would come in the front door, why, they'd have to get up and wait on them. There was a guy from McAllen, I believe, or Mission, somewhere over in there, that we always called him Poeta. He would had a cart on the back, nothing more than just a plain cart, and on the back end of it, why, he strapped a cage on the back end of it. And so he was in the back, in his back seat and everything, while he carried groceries, and you can imagine how many groceries he could carry in the back seat, and soda pop and stuff like this. And he traveled around over the country there to all the grubbing camps where all the men were, and if they needed any groceries, why, he'd sell them groceries. If they didn't have any money, why, and they had a chicken or something, why, he'd take the chicken and trade. Well, then he'd come to us and he'd want gasoline, and if he didn't have any money to buy the gasoline with, why, he'd trade us chicken. So we acquired our chicken yard full of chickens. I forget now, we probably had 100, 150 chickens that was of every type and description that he'd traded, you know, for, and brought him in. And that's where he got his name, Poeta. And I can remember him coming around. I don't know how many years he came around. It finally got to be where he couldn't do any good, because when the grubbing, we did a real good business out there. As long as the grubbing camp, the men, when they came, they never had money enough for their first week's groceries. So we'd have to credit them, and there was always a contractor you know, that was one of the men was the boss or the foreman, and he was the one supposed to stand good for this guy's groceries. And if we could, we'd get the owner of the land that they were clearing to do it too, but he couldn't always do this. And so he'd, we were always a week behind on the grocery bill. I mean, never caught up. In other words, they'd pay for this week, for the week before grocery, and then they'd have to have another week's grocery. So everything went along all right. I imagine we ran that grocery store for about 3 or 4 years, my folks did there. And then finally, the Mexican government, Mexico, said, all y'all come back and we'll give you 40 acres of land and a mule to farm it with. And I don't know what else that they'll give them if you'll just come back home. And boy, you never seen all those grubbers pick up and leave out and go back home, or back into Mexico, because here they said it. And so when they picked up and left, why, they owed us for a week's groceries. And you can imagine how many. I imagine my folks about that time had about $2,000 out, which was a lot of money back there then, because $2,000 represented a year's pay about. And that's about the end of that grocery store there.
Well, in closing, now in closing the interview, how did you end up in Kingsville? Just, you know, in a few
come
words.
Up here to go to college. I came up here.
And then just
after I finished down there at Sebastian, or Lyford, I should say, and graduated there, I decided I wanted to go to college here at ANI. And so I came up here. I finished in 42, in the spring of 42. I came up here in the fall of 42 to start college. And then my folks, they'd been farming and trying to farm down there, and it didn't pan out, and so they decided to come up here and go to work. And that's they both went to work for the Navy, or over at the Naval Base in Corpus. And
so you came to Kingsville in order for school, and then you ended up staying here.
Right.
Well, Mr. Elmore, thank you very much for the interview, and if there's anything, any last comments you'd like to make?
Well, I don't know. I think we've discussed about everything right now, unless there's something.
Okay, now we're continuing the interview, and you tried to get old people that had the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Well, I put the word out that anyone that had any old pictures of Kingsville that they didn't want, I would appreciate having them. If they wanted to keep them, I'd be glad to copy them and reproduce them, and I'd give them the pictures back. And that not only went for pictures, but that went for any pamphlets or literature that they might have on Kingsville, and I'd be glad to have it. So it took a while. I had to talk quite a bit and tell a lot of people about it before they started coming in. And then, of course, people said, well, what are you going to do with them? Well, I said, I don't know. I don't know what I'll do with them. All I'm trying to do is preserve the history of Kingsville and before something happened to it. And so there were still a lot of skeptical ones about it. They were afraid I was going to take them and make a mint of money out of them. And as yet, I still don't know what I'm going to do with them, but they finally started coming in. And of course, just getting the pictures in is one thing. Another thing is having to take the pictures and find out what that picture is, trying to label it and put the name on the picture, if there's people in it, if I can get the names of the people, determine the date that the picture was taken, and everything, which makes it more interesting and more valuable to history, I think. And I'll get all that, type it up, and then I copy it right on the negative, and I print it out, and that, of course, then is just a permanent part of the picture. But I don't know. I'm adding. I've been doing this now for about 4 or 5 years, and it has really started boomeranging, and I'm getting quite a few pictures in, and I've had to worry about albums to place them in and everything, so my albums have built up. Now I've got about 6 or 7 albums, and they're separated down on all phases of Kingsville's history. But I want to say this, I could not limit it to just Kingsville. I would have liked to, but when these pictures started coming in, why, there might have been some of Revere, some of Votman, some of Bishop, some of Raymondville, some of Harlingen, and Brownsville, and I didn't turn any of them down. When they came in, I copied them all. So consequently, I've got pictures of all the surrounding area. Of course, without Kingsville developing, Kingsville developed because of the railroad. Because of the railroad, also Rivera developed, Bishop developed, and Harlingen developed, and Brownsville developed, and all the valley developed. So it's all connected together.